This is the Aftermarket Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Business by the Numbers. I'm your host, Hunt Demers, CPA, Parmelis & Associates. This week, I have a very special episode and a very special guest, but Jamie Hasty, Vice President with Sesco Management Consultants, is going to join us to answer all of your questions having to do with the new big beautiful bill and specifically some overtime and labor laws. So already have this figured out, or maybe you think everything is going okay, I think this is an episode every shop owner should listen to. Before we get into that, I just want to stop and say thank you to you and the rest of the dedicated listeners. Remember, if you want to hear your question answered on here or just had a question for me, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Want to talk to us about accounting and tax services for your shop? Shoot us a message at 301-307-5413. And last but not least, we cannot forget our dedicated sponsors, Promotive and Wicked File. If you need to hire the next rock star or you need to get your back office under control, give them a call.
If you're looking for a full-service staffing solution that does everything from sourcing, qualifying, creating job descriptions, scheduling interviews, to negotiating job offers, Promotive is your answer. Visit them online at gopromotive.com.
Turn chaos into clarity with Wicked File, the AI for auto repair shops. Transform invoices into insights, protect cash flows, and stop losing parts, cores, or credits to maximize your bottom line. Get Wicked File. So just wanted to welcome Jamie Hasty with Sesco here. Really excited. I've mentioned this a couple of times on the episode. Once the new big beautiful bill came out, a lot of you guys had questions about overtime. What is this changing? What do I need to do now? And freaking out. Like I said before, I'm not sure that there's this much cause for panic or really this much stuff has changed, but I'm not an expert on these things, so I brought on the expert. So Jamie, just want to thank you for coming on here.
Hey, good morning, Hunt. Thank you so much for having me. That's a lot of pressure that I'm the expert too. Wow. All right. Well, certainly, you know, you're right. Your clients are panicked a little bit. My clients on the Sesco side have panicked a little bit as well. And you know, I kind of tried to simmer everybody, right? Look, right now, there's still a lot to be fleshed out. But, you know, as you and I have talked about, the overtime requirement has not changed. Sure, there may be some changes on the administrative side from the tax filing side. But even right now, we're still waiting to see what that looks like. We know that the secretary will obviously determine what credit they can take. Again, that's your area of expertise. I don't touch taxes with a 10-foot pole, right? But I do payroll and I do wage and hour compliance. So there is still a lot in motion. And I think it's fair for employers as well as individual employees to be like, hey, what does this mean for me? You know, is there going to be overtime abuse, right? And then that goes back to other policies, procedures, having processes in place to manage that appropriately, to make sure that the overtime is paid correctly. You and I have worked together for quite a few years in a variety of areas, but I've said it before and I'll say it again because I get calls on it every single week, especially from particular industry clients. Wage and hour compliance is one of your number one financial liabilities, if not the biggest. Everybody thinks it's OSHA or discrimination. And I'm telling you, it's wage and hour. It absolutely is because of the intricacies on hourly rate, regular rate, commissions, bonuses, deductions, salaried exempt, salaried non-exempt, hourly overtime eligible. It's so complex and different industries have different nuances. And any small misclassification, even if the intent is really, really good, and we see that a lot, right? From our clients, they're like, gosh.
Intent's like 100%. It's like all of these people are trying to do the right thing. And sadly, a lot of them realize the hard way. Yeah, intent is what, 9/10 of the law?
Yeah, and they think they're doing the right thing, or they think because the employee doesn't want to be paid hourly, they like the salary because it's consistent, that we can just do it. And unfortunately, that is not the way state and federal wage and hour regulations work. And so we run across these really tough scenarios with a lot of clients, small, independent business owners, all the way up to Fortune 100s. I can tell you, Sesco has represented in our 80 some odd year history, many a large client nationwide that you're like, wow. And I can't obviously say the names of who these folks are, but you're like, wow, you're a billion-dollar company and still you're not doing it right. So nobody is safe from the government's, you know, holding your feet to the fire on doing things right. And it's tough, and it does, it adds up. And even with the best intentions, there can still be a lot of missteps. So it's so important to have the right people and have access to the right people that are experts in the tax and accounting side. Again, like, I know enough to be dangerous on that side, but that is not my area of expertise. And that's why we work with Parmila. So, you know, you partner with the wage and hour experts to make sure that we're doing it all right. So a lot of moving parts, and, you know, DOL is very fluid. Yeah, we've got this big, beautiful bill, right? And a lot is still ebbing and flowing there. But then you also have the Department of Labor wage and hour side too.
I mean, I guess just the biggest change of like these ever-changing rules.
That's a great point. You know, regulations will always change, right? Whether it's on the federal side, the IRS side, Department of Labor. And I don't want to get into a political conversation, but that is very dependent upon which administration is in charge at which point in time. And so you get one administration that comes in and changes everything, puts, you know, their people on boards and committees and all of this. And then, you know, if an administration changes over 4 years later or 2 years later on the state side, that swap in administration is going to undo everything else. So it's this constant ebb and flow of regulations and interpretations.
Well, and also I think creates some pitfalls too, because when they deliberately change some of these things, you know, the previous administration was big on not classifying people as independent contractors. It was, for a while there, it looked like the end of independent contractors at all, but it was a very, very abused position. So what we saw a lot before was if someone's getting an audit, a lot of times they were looking for worker misclassification. You made a really good point before, and I'm going to give a quick shout out to Sesco. So Sesco Management Consultants, like Jamie said, works nationwide and has worked with us for probably 15, 20 years, helping our shops in these kind of areas. We have a unique perspective that we're working with auto repair shops all across the country. And what comes up on this stuff is the subtleties. Like, I forget what I emailed you guys the other day. Probably California, that's the one that always scares me. But essentially something along the lines of, my client's trying to do the right thing here, but she's a little bit concerned. I think it was her employee did not want to take a lunch break. And does that qualify for overtime? Does that qualify for any sort of issues? And I was like, the employee willingly wants to skip their lunch break. You're okay with it. They're okay with it. And I said, you're in California though. I'm going to really call in the experts on this. And sure enough, we found out that in fact, that was not legal and that the person had to force it. Sometimes people are looking for certainties of you can do this, you can't do that. But there's a lot of gray areas. So in a gray area, what is your stance? Like, do you just say you need to pay overtime? You need to get more research? Is there ever anyone that's going to be penalized for overcompensating someone or what?
Yeah. So it's interesting when you get into these wage and hour audits, and trust me, I mean, I have done hundreds, if not thousands in my 20 years at Sesco. And to your point, state specific regulations also come into play. So when you talk about audits, typically that's going to be on the federal wage and hour side, right? And there are a variety of ways you can get one. They definitely do pending regulation changes or enforcement areas. And that's, again, tied into which administration. And they typically rotate around healthcare, automotive, hospitality. Why? Because there are so many areas of opportunity for slip-ups. And it's easy money to enforce non-compliance. So typically you're going to get an audit from the federal. Now, that does not mean that Virginia, North Carolina, Texas, New York, Illinois, I'm doing a ton of work out in Illinois too, that on that state level that they can't audit you as well. They absolutely can. But generally speaking, you're going to get it from federal. So when somebody calls into Sesco with a situation and we advise on it on a daily basis, hey, I've got this position. Actually, and we're talking about the automotive service shops. In the last 2 weeks, I have gotten no less than 10 different calls, both from owners as well as other association like industry coaches or association execs that we work with, because we do work with a variety of automotive service national associations and state associations as well. I was having this conversation. I mean, I probably spent across 3 different days, 4 hours with one particular individual about overpayments. You mentioned overpayments, and this particular employee was transitioning out of the organization. Come to find out, he had actually been overpaid in commissions, but had worked overtime. They had him misclassified. And so I had to kind of walk him through the owner, how that looks from an audit perspective, right? So when overpayments do occur, if we're talking about from a wage and hour audit, all they are looking at is, did they meet minimum wage and were they classified correctly as exempt, non-exempt? Independent contractors, we'll get there. Let's put that in the parking lot because that's a whole different conversation, right?
We're not going to open that can up. Don't do that for your technicians. We're moving on. There's a way to legally do it, but it probably doesn't apply to you is my short answer for most people.
Just don't do it, right? Moral of the story. Anyway, so we were talking about overpayments and I was like, look, they're only looking at minimum wage. Overtime is based off of regular rate of pay, not your hourly rate of pay. And that's a hard concept for people that don't speak wage and hour language to kind of wrap their head around. Well, what do you mean regular rate? I'm like, regular rate. So if you pay somebody hourly and overtime, but then you give them a bonus or a commission, which a lot within this industry does, even if they're salaried non-exempt and they're getting a bonus or commission, basically regular rate is total monies earned divided by total clock hours. So hypothetically, if you're paying me $20 an hour, but you're tossing me $1,000 a week, that in essence increases what my hourly rate of pay is. So my regular rate is maybe more like $24 an hour and not $20 an hour. Overtime is calculated on regular rate of pay. So that's like a huge issue right there.
Let's circle back on that one, because when you and I did the talk live at the VAA, this is when everyone's, you could see their eyes calculating.
Deer in headlights, right? They're like, what?
Yeah. And they're like, I'm in trouble. So here's the general idea, guys, is when you're calculating overtime, you can't just look at their hourly rate times 1.5. If you don't pay any commissions, you don't pay any bonuses, then fine. But again, like you said, it's very, very infrequent for auto repair, even if it's only a small amount. But if that guy works 60 hours that week and his check is $6,000, more or less, he is getting paid $100 an hour and that's his rate. You know, now that has overtime a little bit complicated on there. But guys, like if you half their pay is hourly rate, half of that is commission, that all goes into this. You can't try to game it. It's essentially what we're saying here is, nice try. You're calling it something else. This is all going into their wages. Jamie, there is, if I'm a shop owner and I'm giving these guys, if I had set terms on how they meet these bonuses or commissions, I'm paying it weekly, I know I got to pay it. But if I'm a shop out there and I'm like, I randomly give these guys some money or holidays or birthdays, is that the same rules for overtime or no?
Yeah, so that's a great point. You bring up what we call discretionary versus non-discretionary bonuses, commission, whatever you want to call it. It doesn't matter. And people, again, sometimes our shop owners are like, well, but it's a bonus. I'm like, but it's also a commission. Let's not play on words here. There is a distinction in federal regulation regarding discretionary bonuses. So if it's a random holiday and I'm like, you know what? I'm feeling generous today. I'm going to toss you $100. But it's not something that is tied to production, attendance, safety, me hitting some sort of metric where I know based off of my pay plan. That's a whole nother conversation as well. We should have, you know, pay plans outlining how people earn their bonuses or commissions and how that's calculated and all that beautiful.
They're like, Jamie, I'm not even paying overtime, right? So we're going to take the first step here.
Yeah, I know. Anyway, so if it's not expected, there is no rhyme or reason to it, then sure, we can call it discretionary and that is not subject to the overtime. Where that does get a little bit of a gray area, and I want to go back to one of your statements or questions, and you're like, how do you advise? Do you dig into it? Do you ask more questions, research it, whatever? Part of partnering with a CESCO or having a resource that is strong in employment regulation is that consultant, that attorney, whoever it is that you're working with, is going to continue to probe. So let's say, Hunt, you're telling me, oh, I give a holiday bonus. Okay, great. How many years have you given that holiday bonus? What is the bonus amount? Is it consistent across individuals? Have they grown to expect that holiday bonus? Because now there might be a potential where that employee could argue to the Department of Labor, while yes, we're saying it's discretionary, it's at our discretion. We can take it away, we can change the amount, we can do whatever. But for the last 10 years, it's been $100 on Christmas every single day. Wage and hour might try to say, you've now transitioned that into non-discretionary because of the precedent set. So there are weird situations, and we have those conversations with our clients every single day. And you've got to always weigh what the liability is, right?
Are you tired of spending endless hours searching for the perfect talent to join your team? Promotive is your full-service automotive staffing solution. At Promotive, we believe in being more than just a recruiting agency. We become an extension of your team, working tirelessly to ensure we place the right talent with the right shops. With our always-be recruiting mindset, we're constantly seeking out the best professionals in the industry. We manage 90 to 95% of the recruiting process, taking the burden off your shoulders. When you partner with Promotive, you gain a dedicated recruiter and account manager who will work closely with you, understanding your unique requirements and seeking out candidates who fit seamlessly into your shop's culture. We'll ensure that every candidate we present is thoroughly vetted and aligned with your needs. With Promotive, you'll have a peace of mind knowing that we're handling the recruitment process with expertise and precision. We don't just match resumes, we match character, culture, and long-term success. Visit our website at gopromotive.com today and experience the power of Promotive's expertise and dedication. Together, we'll build a stronger and more successful team. Every month, auto repair shops can lose over $20,000 in uncredited parts, cores, and lost profits. Wicked Files' AI-powered software is a game changer. It helped one shop owner recover over $10,000 in missed credits, and others have recovered tens of thousands more. Wicked File puts cash back into your business and hours back into your day. Stop leaving money on the table. Visit wickedfile.com to learn more and get started today. You mentioned something about having this in writing. If that is my shop and I say, I know, but they are all on an employment contract. They all have a written pay plan. And in the pay plan, we've both agreed that any sort of bonuses that are paid in December are discretionary based on if I have a good year or not. If that lingo is in there, that is discretionary, would that help them in a case, or would they still have the argument of like, you're calling it discretionary in here, but you've paid it for the last 5 years?
Great question. Obviously, my argument back, and I would have to pull case law to support it and to refute DOL's stance on it's non-discretionary, is the pay plan prevails, right? We've mutually agreed this Christmas, this December, whatever, is discretionary and not subject to any sort of overtime liability. But absolutely, I have differences of opinion with wage and hour investigators all of the time. That's why CESCO has been in business for over 80 years, because we go toe to toe. I successfully argue aspects with DOL Field Operations Handbook, with case law, with other things that, you know, helps negate that financial liability, that back wage liquidated damages liability. Have they ever been audited before? Was it brought up in previous audits? If not, I'm going to, you know, argue the good faith effort. So there's a lot of ways that we can present our case, for lack of a better phrase. A lot of that is really determined upon that field investigator, what their supervisor up their chain of command is really going to dig into. I've had some really, really amazing relationships with regional wage and hour offices nationwide. Heck, you know, you get the same investigator for four cases back to back, and they're like, good to talk to you, Jamie, again. Nice to see you. And I'm like, yeah, that's great. And then you have others that are very just unagreeable, very rigid. You just never know. And different regions also really focus on other things. So when you get that audit, are they supposed to be looking at all compliance areas? Yeah. But sometimes they're going in and they're only looking at one particular thing. They know they could nail you on meal periods or other things, and they're not going to touch it. So they all have their little focus areas. And you know this as well as I do. The automotive independent shops have one of the largest financial liabilities and largest aspect of non-compliance. I don't care what state you're in, because of the pay plan.
I'll add an asterisk to that too, is this is the largest amount of people that are not in compliance and have no idea.
Yeah.
There's plenty of other industries that are deliberately saying, we don't pay overtime. I don't do any of that stuff. And they know where they stand. They know that if DOL or, you know, OSHA comes in, they're in trouble. But like you said, the bad part about it is a lot of, you know, the people that we're talking about, are saying, bring them in, right? Check it out. I pay my people. I pay them well. I pay them fairly. And a lot of these people are shockingly, you know, getting a six-figure penalty. I have had a couple of people get put out of business from labor lawsuits.
Yeah, we had a client. We did a huge, I didn't, but Bill Ford at our office did a very, very large investigation up in New York, actually, with an automotive service shop, multiple locations. We got called in after the fact, tried to argue it down, but it was millions, millions in back wage liability. And New York has their own state regulations, so they imputed other things. As you know, it closed them down. They shut down. But that also doesn't wipe out your financial responsibility to pay the back wages. So, you know, I want to go back very quickly, if we can, if you'll entertain me for a second, on that client that I was talking about that called, where he had overpaid commissions. This employee was complaining about working overtime, not being paid overtime, but we did a quick audit. We talked through. And throughout that conversation, I was talking about, well, you can take the credit. So you basically have overpaid. We can apply that credit to the back wage liability for the overtime. And it was de minimis. But basically, I was like, look, good faith effort, you overpaid. Don't try to recoup $1,000. Like, why are you going to do that? And that owner was terrified of getting a wage and hour audit. So we talked through all of that. But then that led to 500 other million questions, rightfully so, on service advisors and managers on salary. And this was not a multi-location robot. They had maybe 15 total employees, active owner, day in and day out. And, you know, his particular background came from an automotive dealership. And, you know, 20 years worked in. And he said, well, my service advisors are exempt from overtime. I said, time out, time out. They are in a car dealership? Absolutely, because they have different exemptions from overtime for their industry. You cannot use that. So then we had to go into a partial retail 7i, which is, you know, salary plus and percentages and all of these things. And like I said, I spent probably 4 hours over the course of multiple days kind of walking through. None of his people were keeping time cards. And I said, fix that immediately. It's their work, it's yours. He did have pay plans.
And real quick on that. Everyone should be keeping time cards, period, right?
Yes. Federal law says everybody must maintain a true and accurate time card. True and accurate is not Monday, 8 hours, Tuesday, 8 hours. I want to see in, out, breaks. Then you got to look at how long the break was. If you're, you know, because certain things under 25 minutes, technically 30, but DOL will give you the five. Has to be, you know, compensable time back, all these things. There are obviously, you know, opportunities for somebody that is truly a salaried, white collar exempt employee to not have to keep a time card, but you're perfectly fine making everybody keep a time card. That's great for workers' comp purposes too. So you know who is there, when and where.
It's great for a lot of purposes. I've seen, like, because the reason I made you repeat that is I've probably had, you know, four recent cases on this. Two of them were fine because they had the time cards. Because a lot of this is you're guilty until you prove yourself innocent, just like sales tax. So they said, whoa, 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 you know, and all four of these, I believe, were actually independent lawsuits, not even the state. These are just lawyers that get hired to do this stuff. Tips, I don't know how they do this. But two of them were able to say very quickly, hey, time out. Jamie did not work this many hours. Here's the time cards. We're good to go. And these people, just as fast they came in, disappear. The other two people, as soon as they found out that they don't have time cards, they know that they're going to win in court because now they have their client, disgruntled ex-employee. They have a lawsuit against this person that cannot prove that they actually paid overtime or didn't work it, you know, and they lose almost every single case.
They do. And we have to remember, so I work here in Virginia. That's where my office is. And we have a ton of clients. You work obviously a lot with VAA as well, but there are other states. So you have to remember, too, certain states allow for you to circumvent state or federal DOL and go straight into civil litigation. And you're right. Whether it is a federal agency or an independent attorney that is coming after you from civil litigation, the only thing that you have to defend yourself is your record keeping. I don't care whether that's Title VII, EEOC, wage and hour, you name it. That paper trail is so, so critical to argue your defense because it is their word against ours, unless we can prove otherwise. It's so important, Hunt. And I'm glad that you brought that up because you probably see it, whether that's the state sales tax or not.
One of the things that you mentioned, I was actually surprised to hear, and I'm out of my own curiosity, is when I see this, like you said, a lot of these states, it's the states contacting my clients. Some of these states, it's private attorneys. And as you might imagine, the private attorneys are generally a lot more aggressive and a lot worse. Because you mentioned before, some states don't allow this. Like California's, I always joke, at any point I have five clients getting sued in California for something. But there's other states I don't see it. In some states, can you not actually go hire an attorney directly? You have to go through the state or what?
Yeah. So there are some states that require any wage and hour issues to be filed with the state or the federal government. Virginia used to be, I'm going to use Virginia for an example. So up until, so we're in 25, up until 2021, they added the provision which allows for civil litigation.
That makes sense on the timing from what I've seen personally. Yeah, Virginia is a big one for employment lawsuits.
So there are some states where, you know, their state regulation allows for civil litigation for those things, and others that, you know, don't have that regulation in place. So your only opportunity is to go through the State Department of Labor or through the Federal Wage and Hour Division.
But the thing about it, guys, to think about here is the state, you can say that they have different incentives here. There is a large incentive. The dealerships very rarely get looked into on this stuff, the independent, a large amount. Like Jamie says, there's different laws, right? So there's politics at play. But if you look at someone like a lawyer, they do not care about the automotive industry, but what they've realized is there's very good return on their investment. So if they've zeroed into this and they've zeroed into this industry and you guys to look at it, should that make you concerned? And a lot of this comes back to your documentation here. And I think that I'm going to know the answer to your question. But when we're talking about overtime, and if I'm sitting here after listening to this episode, do we want to be aggressive here and start to recategorize our people so they can get a little bit of credit on the tax return? Or is that something that if they try and get aggressive there, you open up yourself to a ton of different issues?
Here's what I think. Payroll is our number one controllable cost. Is overtime to be worked? You need to make sure that, number one, the business justifies it, that the time records are accurate, that your payroll systems are set up appropriately. Even if you have somebody on salary, that does not necessarily mean that they are exempt from overtime. If you're paying certain people flat rate, that's a whole different conversation. I mean, most of the technicians are hourly. There are some shops that obviously structure it like a dealership to remain competitive, right? By paying a flat rate turned hour, that is a commission pay plan. But then we have to dig in and look at, you know, are they hitting 1.5 times state minimum wage for every clock hour that they work? If they're not, then you got to bonus them up. And if you don't want to bonus them up, they're subject to overtime. So you've got to have the appropriate systems in place. So do I think that there might be some opportunity where people are maybe trying to work additional overtime because I'm thinking, hey, as an individual, now I can get a credit in 2026 with, you know, my tax returns, or hey, maybe even the service shop owner is like, great, you know, there might be some incentive there for me. Of course, there's always area for misuse in any regulation. There's always loopholes that people will find. That's the glory of regulation as a whole. But I think it goes back to having solid policies, procedures, having a good audit. If you have not partnered with somebody to do a true wage and hour audit, especially in this industry, you're doing a huge disservice to yourself. There are really, really important things that we look at, we dig into, we have conversations just like I had with that example of the client that I was speaking with, where he's like, I didn't know I had to keep time cards. I didn't know I had to do this. Why isn't anybody telling us this? I said, Hunt and I have been talking about this with the VAA for how many years in a row? Like, we talk about it at least on an annual basis. He's like, I had no idea. There's a lot there, but you have to be proactive. Because when we are reactive, which and it happens, right? I mean, a lot of times we get called in to represent or to look at something on the back end, and then I try to work my magic. And I have successfully argued a lot of stuff down from, you know, hundreds of thousands down to 50,000 or whatever. There are tips and tricks we can do there. But your systems have to be in place. You should have a good employee handbook that has a policy. Nobody works overtime unless it is approved by the manager. And you've got to hold people accountable for that. But your payroll has to be set up correctly. So if you've got somebody hourly plus overtime and that overtime premium is not being calculated because you're using QuickBooks or Paylocity or all of these other payroll systems.
Any of them not set up correctly, right?
And you have no idea what I'm saying when I say overtime premium. You need an audit and we need to have a conversation because those things add up. So let's be proactive. Let's use this big, beautiful bill as an opportunity and a reminder that while, yes, there may be some tax credits for future year tax filings for an individual basis, this is the employer responsibility that nothing in the big, beautiful bill changes that you're still required to pay overtime to your people if they work it. If they are working unauthorized overtime, that is a performance management issue and not, well, I'm just not going to pay it. That's going to open you up to some liability as well.
And you make a bunch of really good points there, right? Where it's like, hey, you want the good news or the bad news? The good news is your employees might be getting this credit for overtime and saving a couple bucks on taxes. But the bad news is you only uncovered that when you actually audited how you're paying people and realized that you should have been paying overtime for a long time. I cannot stress this enough, guys. Like, there is times when I see this, a client asks me or something so egregious on the financials that I reach out to Jamie and her team and say, there is something going on. But I don't really see how you guys do pay plans. I don't ever see your time cards or see that you guys are not doing it. I don't know that you guys have an off-the-books agreement with one of your team members. And the way that I kind of explain the relationship is very similar to my clients and as it goes for deductions. There are people that want to be black and white. There are some people that do not care about that line. But it's my client, my responsibility, my client to educate them where they stand. There is the same issues with employment. There is a lot of gray areas. There's a lot of things that you're trying to do right by yourself and the team members. And again, you might choose to still have that position, but wouldn't you like to know I'm in a little bit precarious position? Or just like when taxes, if you are actually proactive to this, like Jamie says, and do a little bit of paperwork, that precarious position becomes rock solid because it's been documented and agreed upon. If you guys are listening to this episode hoping to get a tax credit, you have left with maybe a tongue lashing of you need to take a look at how you're doing this stuff. And the best way to do that is to reach out to Jamie and Sesko. We love them. They've done right by us. They've done right by every single client I've ever sent over there. If someone is sitting here right now and saying, I don't even know what a handbook is, what are we even talking about? What's the best way for them to kind of reach out and get some information?
Yeah, absolutely. So happy to reach out to me or reach out to corporate. You can go to our website, www.sescomgt.com, or call the corporate office at 423-764-4127. Again, we have clients that we work nationwide, all industries, but very, very specifically, especially in the automotive industry. And let's have a conversation. There are a ton of options that we can explore in terms of how to get you a handbook or an audit, or you want to chat for a few minutes. We can absolutely look at all of that. And like I said, we've been in business since 80 years. We were actually founded by a former wage and hour investigator back in 1945. Right after minimum wage, the Fair Labor Standards Act came into play. So we live it, we breathe it, we deal with it every day. And it's so, so important. And we really appreciate, Hunt, you're very kind to say we've always taken care of your folks. And we pride ourselves on that, right? We wouldn't be in business as long as we have been if we didn't have a great reputation. So we love our partnership with you. I enjoy working with you personally. And I love helping clients. You know, sometimes I'm not always the favorite person because I, just like you might not be at times where you kind of have to tell them, here are your options and how much risk are you willing to assume with these options? But here's what I suggest. It's still rewarding to know that at the end of the day, we're helping these business owners be successful and to do things the right way and to, you know, continue their business and give back into their communities and to within their industry. So it's rewarding.
Yeah. And the thing about it is this is not something that is hundreds of thousands of dollars. This is not something where we're paying Sesko $5,000 to audit this for the next 20 years. A lot of this is you got to spend some decent money up front to make sure that you're right on this. And you got to make sure that you got the proper oversight. But the worst thing that you can do is I have clients that are paying ADP $1,000 a month for HR. And what you have is you have like the semblance of HR. You have, it looks like you have an employee handbook, but the only thing worse than having no employee handbook is having one that you don't know what's written in there. Because again, I've seen this come back and bite people. Oh, hey, you don't need to do that. Well, sure you do, because it was in your handbook. Well, I didn't know that. Yeah, because you let someone else write it that doesn't know what they're doing and everyone signed it and just kind of entered into a legal contract that you weren't aware of.
Yeah, you got to be careful because, again, most states are at will. So a pay plan is not an employment contract. It's an agreement on, you know, those pay plan, and that's subject to change. You always have to get it signed, updated, that sort of thing. Unless you are dealing with a CEO or a chief level position, nobody should have an employment contract, period, because that contract's going to prevail. To your point, Hunt, with regardless of what is in the handbook, number one, not having one is a bad deal. Number two, borrowing one from your buddy in a different state that might be 10 years old, also a bad deal. Number three, using a generic stock one, and I have to be careful on how I say this because there are other PEO services and other HR quote unquote support services through a lot of payroll vendors that are very generic. They won't give you specific advice. They don't understand the industry or the intricacies, or there might be, to your point, something in that policy that somebody has signed off on that they didn't know was there because, well, XYZ support system gave it to me. So I'm just going to roll with that. You're locked into following that. There are pros and cons. It's got to make sense for their business. But more importantly, as a business owner, you have to have a say in policy, procedure, processes that make sense for your business while also still complying with state and federal regulation.
I love it. Well, I appreciate it, Jamie. We got everyone scared, but I think everyone learned something from here. And then again, like, this is something where you just started your shop last year and you've never done this before. And this is also hopefully a wake-up call that people that are third, fourth generation doing this for a long time. If you have not been audited in the last 5 years, then you need to get yourself audited by a professional, because I haven't seen very many recently where the state has walked away empty-handed. If they are continuing to look into this industry, if they're keep on coming back, do you think that they're having good luck with your competitors out there? Appreciate it, Jamie. Get a hold of Jamie. I'll put all of your contact information that you listed before in the show notes. Yeah, and appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Hunt. It's been a pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Jamie just as much as I did. And like always, when Jamie and I talk, I learn a ton and also get a little bit nervous. I hope that you don't let that nervousness or some of that concern go to waste. Ensure that you're doing this stuff correctly. Ensure that you are not leaving yourself with possible liability that you aren't even aware of. As always, please share with friends. If you have any questions, comments, or ideas for a future episode, shoot me an email at podcast@parmelis.com. Don't forget to check out the rest of the shows on the Aftermarket Radio Network. You can find all of these on your favorite podcast listening apps on the aftermarketradionetwork.com. Thanks again for joining me on Business by the Numbers. Stay safe out there, and I will talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Business by the Numbers with Hunt Demarest on the Aftermarket Radio Network. Follow Hunt on your favorite podcast listening app. Let him know what you'd like him to cover. His email is in the show notes. Hunt is all for advancing the aftermarket.